This is Cameroon Calling. Our weekly magazine of news reports, interviews, commentaries, opinions, and analysis. Is a production of the news department of the Cameroon Radio Television Corporation, CRTV.
You are welcome to Cameroon Calling. Frenetic activity is well and truly happening as the clock winds down to school reopening. But while parents in the French-speaking regions are sucked into the preparations, their counterparts in the English-speaking regions are on a scramble for education for their children, or worse, some of them doing so by looking elsewhere, even with the ever-rising cost of education. This is as a result of the elephant in the room, the drawn-out armed conflict that has toured to disastrous effect. For instance, the education economy that registered about the most impressive growth rate before the outbreak of the Anglophone conflict has received quite a battering that will take years, if not generations, of recovery. As the Anglophone conflict continues to score own goals, we must, however, recognize initiatives by the various stakeholders to ensure some teaching and learning, thanks to robust back-to-school campaigns. But for all what their efforts may be worth, every school reopening still entails navigating a minefield with confusing signals in all directions. That's why preaching back to school without recourse to the safety and well-being of pupils, students and teachers sounds more like showing pity for the beautiful feathers but conveniently forgetting the dying bird. So, what's the prospect of seamless teaching and learning across the country in general and the northwest and southwest regions in particular as school bells will start ringing again in a week's time? That's our focus today. I am Sam Bokube. The CC crew is also around. Kelly Aben is here with the news roundup and week in retrospect. Hi, Kelly.
Hello, Sam. Voter registration, which kicked off on the 1st of January this year, has been officially closed across the national territory in accordance with Section 74 of the Electoral Code. Before the end of the exercise, ELECAM officials were on the field to evaluate the path covered and to galvanize more Cameroonians of voting ages to get themselves enrolled in the different registration centers. The revision exercise that was supposed to end at 2 p.m. this Saturday was extended to midnight by the Director General of ELECAM, Dr. Eric Esuse. In the meantime, as the nation braces up for upcoming elections, the president of the National Communication Council has called on media men and women to abstain from selecting topics for their debates and interactive programs which provoke war, hatred, and defamation. Joseph Chebonken Kalabubse made the appeal during a coffee tour of some media houses in the nation's capital, Yaoundé, aimed at encouraging them to contribute to a peaceful and stable Cameroon. In sports, Indomitable Lions head coach Mark Breese has published a list of 24 players to defend the country in their upcoming AFCON Morocco 2025 qualifiers against Namibia. The list, which was published this Friday, August the 30th, consists of 3 goalkeepers, 8 defenders, 5 midfielders, 8 attackers. The newcomer is attacker Boris Eno, who plays for DC United in the United States. Cameroonian youth have been urged to stay away from mood-enhancing substances and criminal activities which lead only to imprisonment and death. These messages were re-echoed this Friday, August the 30th, during the closing ceremony of the over 1 month mass education caravan in Yaoundé aimed at fighting social ills, which was chaired by Youth and Civic Education Minister Mununa Futsu, who said that when children are well informed, they cannot turn to vice and cannot be manipulated into carrying out criminal acts. At the Star Building, Cameroon was commended for her brilliant organization of the 50th Council of Ministers of the Organization of Islamic Cooperation, OIC. Sheikh Shagbut bin Nayan, Emeritus Minister of State at the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, conveyed the congratulatory message during an audience granted him by the Prime Minister Head of Government, Chief Dr. Joseph Diongute. Possibilities of broadening the scope of cooperation between Yaoundé and Abu Dhabi were explored during the audience. The conclave, which ended this Friday, August the 30th, was pegged on the theme, Development of Intra-IOC Transport and Communication Infrastructure, Major Instrument in the Fight Against Poverty and Insecurity. The head of government also received in audience the special representative of the UN Secretary General for Central Africa, Abdou Abari, who also took part in the event. We stay at the Star Building, where during the week, Prime Minister Chief Dr. Joseph Diongute equally granted a series of audiences to some traditional rulers of the Southwest region who disclosed their desire to organize a festival to vouch the return of normalcy in the region, and another to the paramount ruler of the canton of Akwa Duala, Louis Ndindika Akwa, who was on a maiden tour to Yaoundé following his enthronement. Relatedly, a delegation of traditional rulers of the Northwest region, led by the Vice President of the Northwest Regional Assembly, Fon Yakum Kevin Shomitang, met with the Minister of Arts and Culture, Bidung Pat, to present the upcoming Northwest Heritage Festival for Peace, Reconciliation and Sustainable Development. They said that revamping cultural manifestations across the region would greatly contribute towards restoring social cohesion and stability. A two-day forum dubbed Let's Talk About Women Entrepreneurship took place in Yaoundé under the chair of Women's Empowerment and the Family Minister, Professor Marie-Thérèse Abinondwa. Women entrepreneurs drawn from the 10 regions of the country received training in managerial skills so as to beef up the competitiveness of their products and services. Discussions on the challenges faced by women entrepreneurs in urban and rural areas also featured during the event. Meanwhile, the Minister of Territorial Administration has encouraged traditional rulers to include more women in their traditional councils, adding that the presence of women is not meant to replace the men, but to reinforce their work for a better society. Minister Paul Ntanganji was speaking in Yaoundé at a national workshop for the mobilization of stakeholders for a systematic inclusion of female notables in traditional chiefdoms in Cameroon, organized by the Association of Women and Girls of the Adamawa. In more news of the week, small-scale overseas traders of cocoa and coffee will henceforth be able to show proof of origin of their products, as the new European Union regulation on deforestation requires. This is the outcome of an agreement signed between major cocoa exporters and the state, which entails sharing geolocalization information through a platform created for that purpose. Presiding over the ceremony, Trade Minister Luke Marguambarga Tangana stressed that the existence of the platform to be managed by the Cocoa and Coffee Interprofessional Council will strengthen the credibility of local producers vis-a-vis their EU partners. The new European Union regulation on deforestation will go operational from December 30, 2024. As the back-to-school train gets rolling, the Trade Minister Luke Marguambarga Tangana, while launching a national back-to-school promotional sales, urged parents across the country and all inhabitants of Yaoundé to purchase school needs and other household essentials at affordable prices. The initiative seeks to promote social cohesion while at the same time addressing challenges attributed to inflation. Back to you, Sam.
Thanks, Kelly Eben. The press review is next with Rigobert Maniga. Hello, Rigobert.
Hello, Sam. President Paul Biya's return to Cameroon, the registration of voters for the 2024 voter revision exercise and schools resumption for the 2024-2025 academic year are some of the stories you can't afford to look away when you visit newspaper stands. A full read of the sister publication of Cameroon Tribune, Cameroon Insider, indicates that the return of the presidential couple, Paul and Chantal Biya, on the 23rd of August marked the end of a month-long stay in Europe, while the paper has a whole lot into the head of state's political, economic and diplomatic engagements in the old continent. The national bilingual daily, Cameroon Tribune, has reported the return, highlighting the head of state took part at the 80th anniversary of the D-Day landings and the Battle of Normandy at the invitation of French President Emmanuel Macron. Another story that has gained the attention of newspapers is the next academic year. As reported by Municipal Updates, Prime Minister Joseph John Goodey has used a football tournament to light up the hope of school-going kids in Mundemba, Ndian Division in the southwest region. The paper said the PM's representative, SDO of Ndian, Gilbert Gibai, distributed the school needs to ready the children for a brighter start of the school year. Cameroon Insider, meanwhile, understands that the Minister of Youth Affairs and Civic Education, Muruna Futsu, effectively launched the event dubbed Operation Civic and Patriotic Back to School in Bamenda, Northwest Region. While the paper has highlighted that this event coincided with the launch of the third edition of the Mass Education Caravan, the Post has reported that Cameroon bishops have warned propagandists of schools boycott in the two English-speaking regions, insisting that the schools must effectively function despite the security challenges. The outing comes on the wake of the killing of three members of Cameroon's security forces in Bamenda. Talking about the voter registration exercise which ended last night, read the story in Cameroon Insider, which demonstrates how Cameroon's election management body, ELECAM, has been working with advocates in the voter registration exercise to get many more Cameroonians enrolled. This story has been carried by Cameroon Tribune, The Post and The Guardian Post. Back to you, Sam.
Rigobert Maniga with the press review. Stand by for today's soundbite.
There's no strike that goes on forever. The teachers are being accused left and right for starting a strike and stopping it, for not coming to teach, for failing to deliver as the society expects them to. Of course, the teacher is a human being. I think when a crisis situation degenerates into kind of revolt, like what we're seeing out here, the administrators owe the society that duty, you know, to keep the place safe and secure. So they owe the teachers a responsibility to keep the place safe and secure. And you can't say a place is safe and secure when boys are running around the place with guns and actually killing people.
I will say the security situation has greatly improved. I carried out a 6-week control exercise with my teachers, and the exercise went huge free. The state can't put a security agent behind each Cameroonian. My fervent message to the population is to stand up and seize their rights from terrorists. The forces of law and security are doing their best, and the population too needs to take up their responsibility for serenity to reign.
there are areas that are considered to be red zones, and we don't expect any education stakeholders to be found around this area because they will be risking their lives. Notwithstanding, we have created an atmosphere of conviviality around the administrative plateaus. Bui Division has 6 subdivisions, and we have created regroupment centers in all the 6 subdivisions, such that any school authority who feels that he or she cannot operate his or her school should come to the regroupment center, which is very secure.
The situation being under control is not the sole responsibility of the administrative authority. It involves all the stakeholders, including the leadership of each village. Each village has a traditional administration. The forces, traditional rulers, even though they are out of their villages, they carry out a lot of activities on the spot and can change the mentality of the population and even the armed robbers.
Schools have their own different projects to carry, and it is based on these projects that the PTA Bureau sits with the parents and they decide that, okay, this is the amount that will be used for this project, so we think this is the amount to be levied. And the amount is levied for PTA. You might have one parent having 10 children in that school. That parent will not be paying 10 different PTAs. That parent pays one PTA for all of those children. As opposed to what is happening today, where the PTA has been fixed, 25,000. If a parent has 10 children in the same school, that parent pays 10 PTAs differently for those 10 different children.
The school is not even supposed to send away a child who has not paid registration fee. We believe that if you have admitted them and they are in school, you should be able to come up with different ways by which you can cause them to pay fees. Yes, PTA is not obligatory, particularly because we have cases where people exaggerate. But the truth is that if we look at what the PTAs do, it is difficult for us to say that children should go to school, they pay the registration fee, and they don't pay the PTAs.
Today's CC Soundbite.
Cameroon Calling. Cameroon Calling, we give you both sides of the story.
On Monday, September 9, 2024, school bells will ring again for the start of a fresh school year. This is a significant moment for the young learners as well as a defining time in the life of the nation. For this reason, on Viewpoint on CC, editorialist Ashu Nyenti argues that, despite the looming challenges, a deliberate and conscious effort must be made to protect and preserve the future of Cameroonian children.
The figures are chilling, and the reality is hard to believe, yet it's true. We were stunned to learn from Cameroon Education Cluster that out of the about 7,000 schools in the Northwest and Southwest regions, one in every 4 did not function in 2023. The closure of these schools affected about 246,000 children. In one specific example, out of the 65 villages in the Imojok subdivision of Manyo Division, schooling occurs in only 2 villages, Ekok and Imojok. This has been the grim reality for several years. In just 1 week, the sound of school bells will mark the start of a new school year. Joyful and eager children will return to their classrooms, embarking on another chapter of their education. This moment is not just significant for these young minds, but for the entire nation. It's a time that demands our utmost seriousness and dedication, every effort and resource directed towards making it a success. However, for the children in Imojok and other similar localities across Cameroon, the new school year will remain a distant dream unless urgent and appropriate measures are taken. Without intervention, they will continue to view the prospect of education as something as unattainable as the toy cinematographic films of the 1980s and early 1990s that were called Far Country. As usual, national education authorities have implemented the standard measures to ensure a smooth start to the new school year. While the beginning of the school year is often hindered by various challenges, these issues have been extensively discussed over the years. We won't revisit those familiar concerns now. Instead, we will focus on a newer, more formidable threat, insecurity, particularly in the Northwest and Southwest regions due to the ongoing crisis. We must commend the educational community in those two regions who, despite the significant risks, have shown remarkable resilience in continuing to send their children to school. This year, although the threats may have somewhat diminished in intensity and severity, they remain a constant presence. The situation is alarming. In 2023 alone, over 25 violent incidents were reported, including the brutal killing of school personnel, the kidnapping of students and teachers, physical assaults, and the destruction of school infrastructure. This is a stark reality facing school reopening in these two regions. This isn't just a challenge. It's a direct assault on the future of our children and the stability of our nation. The gravity of this situation demands our immediate and unwavering attention. We revisit this grim reality not to instill fear or discourage parents and children. Far from it. Our goal is to awaken our collective conscience to the pressing truth that nothing should be taken for granted and no detail should be left to chance. It is not enough to simply reassure us on the eve of school reopening that everything is under control. We must take action. While security issues may not be discussed openly, the evidence must be clear that we are actively working to ensure the safety of our children and schools, aiming for greater security than in 2023. The adage that the youth are the future of our country has never been more relevant. Every nation has an undeniable duty to protect its future, and we must make a deliberate effort to safeguard ours, our children. I rest my case.
Editorialist Ashu Nyente is the Chief Unity Palace correspondent. Administrative officials in the Northwest have been firm that the education of children is non-negotiable and the various stakeholders must see to it that schools are opened come September 9 with teachers effectively present. Ahead of reopening day, several conclaves are being called by the divisional and subdivisional officers with teachers, all driving home the point that teachers must be present at their duty post or face sanctions. However, the question many have been asking is how strategic these meetings have been in addressing the ever-growing insecurity threats and targeted attacks on schools and teachers. Mercy Kusi.
In the midst of the armed conflict and violence in the Northwest, several teachers have been either murdered or tortured in different ways just for doing their job. These incidents have been recurrent year in, year out. As such, apart from attending to the highly demanding profession, teachers are now saddled with the weight of war and psychosocial trauma. In all of this, the goal of government has been to have schools go operational in all 34 subdivisions of the region, and the administrative officials say they are there to ensure this happens. While education remains a priority, the national president of the Teachers Association of Cameroon, Valentine Tame, says assembling teachers to dispense lessons in a conflict zone ought to be done with their safety in mind if they must be at their best.
When we thought that we had to take children back to school for them to get their own deserved education, we suspended the strike. There's no strike that goes on forever. The teachers are being accused left and right for starting a strike and stopping it, for not coming to teach. for failing to deliver as the society expects them to. Of course, the teacher is a human being, has flesh and blood too. And I think when a crisis situation degenerates into kind of revolt, like what we're seeing out here, the administrators owe the society that duty, you know, to keep the place safe and secure. So they owe the teachers a responsibility to keep the place safe and secure. And you can't say a place is safe and secure when boys are running around the place with guns and actually killing people. One way or the other, the administration has to be able to see how to handle the situation. And we can say places are safe and secure when children are back in schools, nothing hampering them, nothing disturbing them. Once the children are there, the teachers are bound to be there. When there are no children, how do you expect teachers? When the children cannot even dare approach the schools, because some of these schools are in camps for militia men, how do you expect teachers to move to their schools and go and take service there, as I hear some administrators are saying?
The senior divisional officer of Boyo, Alhaji Saidu Musa, says teachers employed by the state owe it a duty to be present in school as a sign of responsibility, and they have to be involved in the strategies mapped out to address insecurity.
We have defined our plan of security that we cannot tell to everybody to guarantee the security of the teachers, the students and people, and to guarantee the security of the premises of the schools. So security starts at home. All teachers, all students have to feel in their mind that they are well secure, because they have sacrificed themselves to work for the nation. They have sacrificed themselves to give education to our children, because the youth is the bedrock of our nation.
In some areas, the challenge has been more severe than in others, and fingers have been pointed to some teachers for using the crisis as an excuse to stay away from work even when there are no risks involved. The DO of Batibu, Eselakwe Atembapa, is of the school of thought that in subdivisions where regular school has fully resumed, the effort and goodwill of teachers have greatly contributed, and he hopes to see the same result in his administrative units.
I will say the security situation has greatly improved. I carried out a 6-week control exercise with my teachers, and the exercise went huge free. The state can't put a security agent behind each Cameroonian. My fervent message to the population is to stand up and seize their rights from terrorists, as it is being done elsewhere. The forces of law and security are doing their best, and the population too needs to take up their responsibility for serenity to reign in the Batibo subdivision.
The trade union leader, Valentine Tame, underscores that administrative authorities who master the security shortcomings of their areas should be objective in their approach to the back-to-school campaigns, especially when speaking from a privileged position than the teachers, who are not entitled to the kind of protection and security given to the administrators.
Even if you are there and pictures are taken with that security in the night, people retire to their houses, and you know what happens. I mean, the militia men who move under cover of darkness and who are not challenged as they move around in the night, they come for you. Yes, I saw you there. I saw you there. Security can only be security when it is security 7-on-7, 24-on-24. If it is not that, then it's not security. Then we are playing a game of hide and seek. And evidently, the civilians and especially the teachers will always be the loser.
As explained by the senior divisional officer for Boy, Gilbert Sunday Menyong, teachers posted to the division won't have to face such problems this year, as they have been taken into consideration in their security plan.
We have instructed all education stakeholders to limit their movements, to know where they are supposed to go to and where they are not supposed to go to. There are areas that are considered to be red zones, and we don't expect any education stakeholders to be found around this area, because they will be risking their lives. Notwithstanding, we have created an atmosphere of conviviality around the administrative plateaus. Bui Division has 6 subdivisions, and we have created regroupment centers in all the 6 subdivisions, such that any school authority who feels that he or she cannot operate his or her school should come to the regroupment center, which is very secure. And we have ensured that our forces, the gendarmerie, the police, the army, that they secure the various centers that we have created at the level of of all the subdivisions.
Education stakeholders and the local authorities are reporting that this year, unlike the previous years, more parents and guardians have expressed the wish to see their children attend regular school. And this, according to the Divisional Officer for Nkum, Elvis Mulutaki, is enough motivation for teachers to be present in school and keep the dreams of those yearning for education alive.
All schools in Nkum Subdivision have been centralized for security purposes. So I believe with the measures that have been put in place at my level, the 2024-2025 academic year in Nkum Subdivision is going to begin hitch-free till the end of the academic year. All necessary measures have been put in place, and I guarantee all stakeholders, the parents, the children, that their security is guaranteed. Their security is guaranteed. The state has put everything into place to guarantee the security of all stakeholders. The time is now. Nkum Subdivision has to be free. Education is the key. We don't have to take anything lying down.
As with every other job, some degree of passion and commitment is needed to practice the teaching profession in a fragile environment as the Northwest. And while we all agree that teachers deserve to be protected, there are also glaring examples of teachers who still earn salaries without working, even in areas considered as green zones. And the authorities are resolute that these ones need to be fished out so that the committed teachers stay focused and don't feel cheated or undeserving of certain privileges.
Mercy Kusi in Bamenda. Talking about cases in which teachers have been sanctioned for failing to perform their duties, Ngo Ketunja Division hit the headlines in the recent past. In an attempt to shed light on the situation in that administrative unit, George Kelong had a telephone conversation with the senior divisional officer, Mr. Henderson Ketongkonge, who first talks about their readiness for the new school year.
I think we are ready because we know better preparation is tantamount to a successful academic year. And throughout the summer holidays, we have indulged in preparation with method and serenity. And we have been able to sensitize and mobilize the local populations of my division to do the cleanup of schools. And I think with a lot of enthusiasm. Besides that, we introduced holiday sports tournament for youths, which was inter-village. And this competition went on very well in the different villages and culminated with the finals in the. This too has played a lot in creating a peaceful atmosphere and giving some net confidence in the minds of the population, that is psychologically. And we are gearing up with coordination meetings and the sector conference, which have taken place in Ngokutunja, and we are multiplying and concerting to see how best we can implement most of the measures that have been identified to ensure a successful takeoff and a successful school year.
Mr. SDO, ever since the armed conflict in the Northwest and Southwest regions started escalating, you have been seen and heard making frantic efforts to ensure effective schooling in Ngokutunja. What assessment do you make of your efforts?
Indeed, I can say the efforts are yielding a lot of fruits. I took up the helm of this division. It was total boycott for schooling in the division. And we took off from a situation of one regrouping center with about 5 to 10 school children. But today, we are proud the number has skyrocketed. And we don't have only one regrouping center, but several regrouping centers in the division, at least at the level of every subdivision, where children have the opportunity to come and carry out their education. When I talk of regrouping centers, those are centers where teachers and students come and are protected by the forces of law and order. We have moved from a situation of total boycott to a situation where the mentality has changed and there is 100% school attendance in the lay, private and denominational schools. We have moved from total boycott to a situation where the participation is very good
with excellent participation in end-of-course exams, be it the first school leaving, the GCE, and even teachers training colleges. I think Ngokitunda, in terms of results, has been playing a leading role. And besides that, our examination centers, which from the start was just one, they have increased. And as I said, the number of registered candidates in these official external exams has also increased tremendously. So the mentality of the people has changed and participation is total.
Mr. SDO, when you say private schools, you rate them at 100%, and then you are talking about regrouping centers. Who are those who are studying in the regrouping centers?
When I talk of regrouping center, it is because of the major obstacles that we have been facing. Our major obstacle has been that of public schools. That is, teachers of government schools at all levels have been boycotting completely. We attribute this to the syndrome of terror and fear, which is discouraging them. But again, the teachers themselves have been playing a hide-and-seek game. They have been, in a way, complacent in the sense that we created these centers and we created residential areas where they could come and regroup and carry out their activities. But they were adamant and illogically, they have been waiting for their monthly salaries and government credits that have been allocated for the functioning of these schools are being used for schools that are not reopened. Reason why we came in with a salary suspension as a means of dissuasion, as a means of discouraging them, and to suspend the use of credits for schools that are not operational. But with the much cry and complaints, which had an important impact as far as families are concerned and so on, we had to temper mercy with justice. And after some plea, we issued resumption certificates and effective service to these teachers to encourage them to come back because the method was considered to be too hard and harsh. But this was just meant to encourage them to come back.
When you say government teachers are complacent, does it mean that they don't teach at the regrouping centers? Because we are made to understand that no government school, either the basic level or secondary education level, has a single learner ever since the crisis started escalating in September 2017 till date.
No, I think this is not true, because if you go to the regrouping centers, you will see...
We're talking about the schools. Is there a single school in Ngokitunjia division? I mean a government primary school or government secondary or high school or government technical high school that has had a single student or pupil ever since the crisis started escalating, Mr. SDO?
Yes, we have a few of them that struck a deal with the community and struck a deal with the proponents of boycott, that is, these armed separatist groups. I can quote you an example. In Bambalang, the government schools were all on primary, secondary, and you are aware of the fact that Bambalang was a notorious active zone in terms of separatist action. But surprisingly, some government primary schools in Bambalang were operational. Secondary schools were operational. I'm giving you just an example. It's just to tell you that apart from the regrouping center, we had one or two schools dotted here and there where teachers came, though timid, and classes went on.
Who takes the blame then? Is it the pupils and students who are not coming to school or the teachers who are not there to maybe teach empty classrooms?
The blame is collective. The teachers are the first to be blamed. Because if they were in school, the parents would send their children to school. But on the basis of fear caused by atrocities, they have not been coming. So they have to be blamed. The fear and terror with some is genuine. But with a large majority of them, it's a hide-and-seek game, which they are playing. Some even encourage armed groups to come out with threatening and intimidating messages directed to government school teachers. And they use it as a pretext because they need some free time, they need some liberty to go and carry out their part-time jobs in safer areas. You will agree with me that a good number of evening classes in safer areas are being run by government school teachers.
That is, on top of their salaries, they are doing part-time jobs, and they need that freedom to go and do it. So they encourage the instability. They are complicit to the insecurity which is going on, and they use it as a pretext to be free.
Mr. SDO, yes. How do you explain the fact that schools in Dobtown are not functioning effectively?
They have not been functioning because of some of the factors which I gave you, because of the issue of enclavement. Most of these
I'm talking about Dobtown. We have major schools in Dobtown. We are told no child has set foot on the school campuses since September 2017.
Yes, I will give you examples of some of these schools. GPHS, Government Bilingual High School in Dob, which is not functional up to date, despite all the threats. It's not only that one. Government Technical High School is also part of it. And the other government secondary schools which are around insistently pleaded to allow their schools go operational at the regrouping center where there is security. We replied by insisting on providing security services in their school campuses. But these head teachers have been very, very adamant to plead that they will remain but in the regrouping centers. But we have adopted a different approach this year. We have taken a joint resolution with the teachers, with the head teachers, principals, in our coordination meeting that they are going autonomous. Each school has to open the door, come rain, come sun. We will no more have recruiting centers for this coming year. And any school that does not open its door is tantamount to closing down the school.
Don't you think that is, in a way, exposing the teachers to danger?
I don't think so, because the mentality has long changed.
But you remember quite well that just last academic year, when some school officials were returning from coordination meetings, some of them were kidnapped, taken to the bush, and their families had to pay huge ransoms. We hear of all sorts of atrocities being committed there. Don't you think that the teachers are being exposed to danger?
I will tell you why I think the mentality has changed. When we carried out our campaign drive of cleaning up these abandoned school campuses, we mobilized the population, and those who came in their large majority came and participated with a lot of excitement and enthusiasm and expressed their feeling to us that they are willing and are ready to support academic staff to carry out their activities because they really need the education, and that the lay, private and denominational schools are good. But the majority of our children are being deprived of this right to education, which is a universal and fundamental right.
But you know that the terrorists have targeted government schools.
Indeed, they targeted government schools, but that era has since revolved, because you will hardly hear of the campus of a government school that has been vandalized or destroyed, or classes being used as a camp or being used as a prison for kidnapped victims and so on. You will hardly hear of such situations. You will hardly hear of situations where teachers are being killed. The terrorist separatists, after much sensitization, have come to understand that education is a fundamental and universal right. Reason why they drifted from their radical position to a position which is approachable. The threat and intimidation which are carrying out today is more or less for economic reasons, because they will hardly destroy school buildings or campuses, but they will indulge without discrimination. I say without discrimination. Not only teachers, but even the entire population with exaction. That is kidnapping for ransom. But the problem there is, each time a teacher is kidnapped for ransom, a lot of alarm is being raised. But people, business people, people of various sectors of life are also being kidnapped on daily basis, especially drivers of heavy trucks, because they want but money. The mentality now is kidnapped by these armed gangs for ransom, for heavy sums being paid. And it's not only teachers who are being targeted. It is true that as an ideology by the separatists, they hate anything government. Reason why they would tolerate the private and denominational educational administrators and teachers, but would not in any way tolerate those of public schools.
Don't you think it would have been proper for you to relay that message to the authorities in Yaoundé than being hard on the teachers of government schools?
The first thing I will tell you there is that we tampered justice with mercy. And almost all the teachers, the quasi totality of the teachers who suffered from salary suspension, benefited not only in the change of those prefectorial orders or what you call observation, which of course we sent to the Ministry of Finance and Public Service and their salary suspended, to a different situation where we took a counter prefectorial order, not only reinstituting those salaries, but reinstituting them with their arrears owed them. So, in effect, we used that method as a bit, a way of encouraging these teachers to come back. And we have talked to them about the issue. It's not an issue of exposing them to insecurity, but talking to them to come back and take up their jobs. And we provide the protection for them to do their jobs.
Protection at what level, Mr. SDO? Will you protect them in their homes?
We protect them in their school campuses, and we provide them with residential areas where they can stay and be protected.
The residential area in Dop or near the various schools in the division?
We had residential areas in all the regrouping centers.
But you are saying that this year, every school has to open its doors.
Has to open, and we envisage a situation where they will be protected in school and they can take temporary disposition to stay in their campuses and carry out their jobs freely with the security dispositions which we have at our disposal. Each subdivision has the capacity, security-wise, to protect school campuses. And it is the security officials who give us this assurance of what they will do. So we take them for what they are saying, and we hope those dispositions will be taken.
They are reassuring you that they will take care of teachers, whereas we are told that the head teacher of a government primary school was kidnapped and taken near the brigade in Dob and butchered just there.
That is an issue. When you say butchered, you want me to give you the circumstances of what exactly happened?
Yes, sir.
This is a teacher who was kidnapped alongside other teachers. He was, first of all, a patient. And what happened is, while in the hands of those armed separatists, they asked for ransom, which the other teachers heeded to. But unfortunately, he did not, and carried out an attempt to escape from the hands of the terrorists. When he was captured and being a patient, he was violently treated, and when he was taken to the hospital, he gave up the ghost. In fact, I think when we look at it critically, the teacher was not intended to be killed by the armed separatists. They took this teacher, and what they wanted from him was ransom, along with his other colleagues. The other colleagues paid their ransom and came out. But he attempted to escape and was maltreated by these terrorists, being seriously sick. He collapsed, and when he was taken to the hospital, he gave up the ghost.
What if somebody accuses you of, again, trying to give the impression that the situation is under control in Gokitunjia, whereas that is not the case?
I will say here that the situation being under control is not the sole responsibility of the administrative authority. It involves all the stakeholders, including the leadership of each village. Each village has a traditional administration. The force, traditional rulers, even though they are out of their villages, they carry out a lot of activities on the spot. They orientate a lot of activities. They have an audience and can change the mentality of the population and even the armed robbers. So security is not a matter of administrative authorities and heads of defense and security services, but an issue of popular defense where the population is collaborating and ensuring that they stay aloof and protect activities in their villages. As far as we are concerned, we take measures and see what we can do at our level, and we sensitize this population to change their mentality. And I realize that as of now, there is really a change of mentality. The population is drifting from this fear syndrome to a situation where they can even dare to see what they can do to save education, which is a fundamental human right, and that it has much to do with the
development of their areas, and they have to face the bull by their horn. We hope the stakeholders will understand us better and accompany us in all the measures, in all the efforts we are putting to see to it that affordable education is open to this population. Because the tendency has always been denominational schools, lay private schools, but the majority cannot afford for this. The peasant farmer who is back in the village needs affordable education, where government has put in place infrastructure, teachers in every quarter, in every village, for them to come and exploit it to their advantage. So we are calling on this population to continue to assist in this campaign for total education in Ngoketunja Division.
The senior divisional officer for Ngoketunja, Mr. Henderson Ketongkonge, in that telephone interview conducted by George Kelong. Among the bodies, the government of Cameroon is counting on for a successful school year, as it has done in the past, are parent-teacher associations, the PTAs. They were created to assist the government in providing quality education for the country's youth by way of services and infrastructure according to their means and needs. But the PTAs have been rocked by corruption scandals and influence peddling. Moki Edwin Kinzeka, in the following report, looks at the history of PTAs in Cameroon, how they have contributed to the transfer of knowledge and the shortcomings they face.
The need for parents to team up with teachers to ensure that children's education is not compromised and the country's young ones deprived of a basic human right, a key to enlightenment and a source of wealth, health and power, resonated in the early years of independence. The number of school children was increasing substantially, while school infrastructure and the quality and quantity of teachers recruited by the government remained largely insufficient. Ndikum Peter is a parent and a teacher. He has been PTA president in several schools and has also served as coordinator of the Union of Parent Teachers Associations. He vividly remembers how Cameroon embraced PTAs.
The Parent Teachers Associations in Cameroon, within an institutional framework, came to light under the most celebrated minister, Damunda Mjoya of blessed memory, who was then the minister in charge of education. At this early stage, it was more of a consultative body, but with the passage of time and because of want or because of need, the PTAs became very useful partners in material and financial contributions geared towards ameliorating the teaching and learning processes. The focus of the PTA, therefore, is providing necessary assistance to the school to attain its objective.
To provide this necessary assistance, parents had to contribute. At the time, school needs were examined and the PTA decided what each student or pupil had to pay to supplement what the government did not provide. Reverend Professor Anyambot Emmanuel Anya, an educationist and PTA member, says PTA executive had to take into consideration parents' ability to pay.
Let me say here that no government in the world has been able to educate its citizens without the involvement and participation of parents and some well-intentioned individuals. Parent-teacher associations were originally created to aid schools in the smooth running of the educational system by providing some of the services and amenities that government is unable to provide because of scarce means. Money paid voluntarily by parents as agreed upon in the associations is used either in improving the infrastructures of schools by building classrooms, equipping science laboratories, computer laboratories, food science laboratories, and sometimes giving prizes to outstanding and intelligent students, and also appreciating the efforts of well-intentioned teachers. Sometimes these monies are also used to develop soft skills. By so doing, they are participating in the development of the curricula for a holistic upbringing of our children.
Today, the government has decided that PTA levies should be paid and an amount has been levied, contrary to what Civism Elvis Sunjo and Civism Austin, both parents, would have loved.
Some of us who school in the Northwest and Southwest would discover that the PTA was not unique because schools have their own different projects to carry. And it is based on these projects that the school has earmarked to be carried for the year that the PTA Bureau sits with the parents and they decide that, okay, this is the amount that will be used for this project. So we think this is the amount to be levied. And the amount is levied for PTA. You might have one parent having 10 children in that school. That parent will not be paying 10 different PTAs. That parent pays one PTA for all of those children. As opposed to what is happening today where the PTA has been fixed, 25,000. If a parent has 10 children in the same school, that parent pays 10 PTAs differently for those 10 different children, which becomes too heavy for the parents. Secondly, there are some schools that don't need to pay PTA again because they don't have any projects.
The payment of PTA levies is good. Thanks to such contributions, more teachers are recruited, classrooms constructed, laboratories equipped, basic school needs bought, and there is dynamism among the education community. But corruption, selfish interests, influence peddling are well seated in the sector.
We have noticed a lot of deviance, malpractices and disorder in PTAs, evident in mismanagement, swindling of funds, quest for personal aggrandizement, greed. Some citizens have even taken the PTA offices as professions, moving from one school to the other, and even where they don't have children. Shortcomings from some PTAs in Cameroon have been generalized or universalized, meaning that we govern using bad examples. The English subsystem where I come from prides itself with some of the most democratic, transparent, and acceptable practices. In most schools, for each academic year, we contribute for an agreed purpose, execute under sound control and supervision or supervisory mechanisms. Our contributions are usually multifold or pluridimensional. The provision of didactic material and infrastructure, payment of part-time staff, motivation of permanent staff, assistance to physically challenged and underprivileged learners. All of this is for the supreme interest of our children. Our take is that the government should handle the PTA as partners and come up with laws that can govern PTAs to assure proper management and productivity.
Some unscrupulous PTS executive members, to the complicity of uncontrollable principals, misuse the funds of PTS for themselves, and this has discouraged well-intentioned parents from paying their contributions willingly. I am indeed happy that the Minister of Secondary Education has regulated the payments and use of PTA funds. There is a process of those accounts being audited, and where misused funds have been discovered, culprits will be brought to book. My opinion is that PTAs have come to stay as a partner in the development and running of our schools between parents, teachers, even the students, so that we can build cohesion of well-brought-up children in the society.
Civism Elvis Sunjo, Civism Austin, Njamchi Theodore, and Halle Celestine agree that there is the need for the government to clean all PTAs in the country.
In some cases where the PTA has excessive powers, it could use its powers to flush out administrators that are not desired by people of the community or some elites of the community.
With private institutions, the proprietor may hire a principal or a vice principal, one, who does not come from that community, and two, who has an opposing view. So some politicians or overzealous elites put in every effort of theirs to frustrate the efforts of this authority, which might lead to the firing of this authority or transfer to another area. With the government institutions too, you could find these type of situations where a principal is appointed and the person does not come from that area or has a different view or does not connect well with the community. And some greedy individuals or politicians will put in every pressure they can and even write complaints that might lead to the transfer of this administrator as a punitive measure.
PTAs have developed into what me and you can never admit. Some of them collect this money, and what happens is that this money is being utilized to the test of the principal and to the PTA president and his acolytes who are in the exco, leaving the children bewildered. And furthermore, some of these PTAs share contracts. They are the very people who take the contracts, and they don't execute them well. They will be the very people who come and sit to say that they are evaluating, which is not good. So our cry is that people should get up from that slumber and do something worthwhile to be able to save our schools that are decaying.
A child pay 5,000, which is for computer. A child study from Form 1 to upper seat without ever touching a computer. If that child schooled in that school for 7 years, meaning for the 7 years, 35,000 has been paid, but that child will never touch or sit on a computer. Secondly, for the clean and green school, which 2,000 goes each student out of the PTA, it is aimed at bringing sanity, respect, discipline in all aspects of school life. We're happy this time that the minister has brought out the unique ID card, which is going to carry all the history of a student. 1,000 francs goes for photos for ID. But at certain moments, students finally don't even have the ID card. The state can decide to make it in such a way that schools that don't have any infrastructural development, when the PTA is paid in such schools, the money should be transferred to other areas where there is high need for infrastructure. That would bring some equilibrium so that those who already have more should contribute to assist those who do not have.
Already, there are sustained efforts to punish corrupt PTA officials and school principals who team up with them to fidget with the people's money. Each year, several thousand complaints are filed to the anti-graft body CONAC, as Irin Morikan Che, head of CONAC's Prevention and Communication Division, says.
Such denunciations usually come from parents who are unsatisfied with the way these funds are managed. At times, members of the PTA Bureau or staff of the institution concerned who know the actual amount that was collected and realize that the projects that were earmarked were not done or poorly executed. At times, PTA presidents also denounce principals who try to meddle or appropriate PTA funds. Generally, when CONAC receives such denunciations, the chairman, Reverend Dr. Dodine Masigams, assigns investigators to verify the veracity of the denunciation. Once parents contribute PTA levies, they become public funds and need to be managed with utmost transparency. That is why CONAC is also obliged to investigate how PTA funds are used.
CONAC says it does not hesitate to sanction PTA officials found guilty.
There's been cases where those indicted have actually reimbursed the money embezzled. But in all cases, the findings are forwarded to the competent authorities of the sector and administrative sanctions are meted out to those involved in such acts. This can be outright dismissal of the principals. If it's a principal concerned, it can be his outright dismissal. Generally, CONAC encourages parents to ensure that money collected as PTA levies serve the purpose for which it is collected. And if at all they realize that these funds are being embezzled or mismanaged by an individual or a group of individuals, they should denounce. The contacts of CONAC, notably the toll-free number 1517 and the WhatsApp number 658-262682, are posted in virtually all public schools in the country. Parents should thus denounce the mismanagement of PTA levies to break the corruption chain in mismanagement of such funds. Because when they don't denounce corruption to CONAC and they know that these acts of corruption exist, they are indirectly accomplices. That is why we encourage parents to denounce any suspicion of mismanagement of PTA funds.
If PTAs are to help to build a sense of community among parents, teachers and school children and improve the teaching and learning process, then there should be sanity in the body of people who have chosen attending a particular school. That is why the entire nation is now looking forward to the Minister of Secondary Education and the Minister of Basic Education to make sure things go right.
Moki Edwin Kinzeka on Cameroon Calling today to address worries about the PTA is the Southwest Regional Delegate for Secondary Education, Dr. Mbua Hana Etonde. In the following interview, CC's Olivia Mbuai-Ambai first asked the lady who had served for long as principal to react to rumors about the suspension of PTA dues.
In fact, the minister was emphatic. PTAs are a very strong arm of the management of our schools, and she had not given any instructions that PTAs should be suspended. The instructions that she gave was that the school heads and all other stakeholders should work very closely with the parents and come up with PTAs that will be able to help the state to run the schools. The only thing that she cautions is that they should not use the umbrella of PTAs and collect money and don't do what they're supposed to do for their schools, because PTA funds are public funds and should be used as public funds. And that PTAs should not go beyond 25,000 francs, depending on the projects that the schools have. As far as secondary schools are concerned in the region, like all other secondary schools in the country, PTAs are allowed. They have not been suspended.
What appraisal do you make of the impact PTAs have had in secondary schools in the Southwest region?
I would like you to know, and the public, that truly PTAs really help public schools. The PTAs do not only limit themselves on infrastructural development of schools, but they even assist in the pedagogic well-being of the schools. That is why in the Southwest region, we have PTAs that have constructed and equipped science labs, computer labs. The PTAs continue to hire the services of teachers and discipline masters in the schools. The PTAs continue to hire the services of secretaries in the schools. The PTAs are a very strong arm in the management of our secondary schools in the region. For example, GBHS Motengene, it may be surprising, but that school, from creation, it was only when the present Minister of Secondary Education came that that school had its first infrastructural support from the government. The PTA built all those classrooms, not only in FACO, in all the divisions. And I do not have any reason not to congratulate them.
The management of PTA levies has always been a bone of contention. You who have been a principal before, what is really the problem?
Truly, PTAs, their rules and their roles are clear. And when the school head, who is supposed to be the advisor to the PTA, knows this rule and knows the role of the PTA, this person takes the position that he or she has as the advisor and advises, and there will be no problem. Where the PTAs do not understand their limits, and the principal does not understand his or her limits, we have problems. Sometimes parents struggle and they want to get into the PTA executive because they think that when they get there and collect money, the money is their money that they can be using as they like. And the principal's role is to let the parents know that once they sit in a general assembly and adopt an amount for the PTA, and the divisional delegate confirms that amount, when it is collected, it becomes public funds. And its management is supposed to be done following the rules and regulations that govern the PTA. When the principal plays that role and the PTA understands it, there is no problem. For 18 years straight that I was principal, I never had a problem with my PTA. PTA money is not a principal's money, and it is not the PTA president's money. It is school money. There is a procedure in the expenditure of PTA funds. When money is collected by the PTA treasurer and not the bursar of the school, this money is kept in the PTA account of the school. And when it is kept in the PTA account of the school, because a budget had been drawn even before the money was collected, the PTA president and his executive or her executive, they meet with the principal of the school and they say, fine, Now that schools are about to reopen, for instance, and we need to clean the campus before children come, we had budgeted that we're going to use 200,000 francs for the cleaning of this campus. I'm giving it as an example. Now, when they agree on that, the PTA president instructs the treasurer of the PTA to disburse 200,000 francs for the cleaning of the school campus. It's not verbal. You have to write, give written instruction. And then now when that is done, the PTA treasurer disburses the money to the bosser of the school and not the principal. That money, the principal does not have to touch it. It goes to the bosser of the school. The bosser of the school now tells the principal, the PTA has given this 200,000 that you asked for. The principal uses his or her pen and also does a written instruction to the bosser that the bosser should disburse that money to whoever is supposed to clean the campus. And all of these records are kept rubric after rubric. And when that is done, the PTA does not eat school money. The principal does not eat school money. And this money is used for the school as it's supposed to be done.
What texts actually govern the PTA?
We have many texts that govern the PTA. If we even go to the February 2001 document that talks about the running of public schools, it is mentioned there how the PTA is supposed to be run. We also have the 19th of August 2008 document and the 10th of August 2006 text. In fact, they are secular letters that are there to help the parents, teacher associations, to help the principals and all other stakeholders who are concerned with the PTA to know how to manage the PTA funds.
Who is supposed to be a member of a PTA? This question is coming up because there are complaints about cases in which some PTA executive members still stick to their positions long after their child or children had left the school.
They're talking about Parents Teacher Association. And so it is an association of parents whose children are in that school. Remember, the PTA ESCO comes from the various classes. They are representatives of the various classes. Let's imagine that the one was elected last year as a representative of Upper Sixth, and so the child had passed the GC and is going to go to the university. Next year, that person is not a member of the executive. The school principal should be able to, in the next PTA General Assembly, declare a vacant position so that they will have to vote someone else into that position. People should not hang on positions in the schools, because you cannot have interest in a school more than the parent whose children or whose child is in that school. The rules are clear. The roles are clear.
In the case of misappropriation, who takes responsibility? The PTA president or the school principal?
The school principal will be the one who will be asked questions first. The sole administrator of that school is a school principal. The school principal is the head of the institution. And by the text says that the school principal is an advisor to the PTA. And as an advisor, you are supposed to know what is happening in the PTA and advise and direct. And so in the case of misappropriation, the principal will be called up first, but whoever misappropriates will, of course, be booked.
We understand that PTA levies do not have fixed amounts. They are determined by the projects earmarked and the number of learners in a given school, insinuating that if there are no projects, there should be no PTA levy. But we have situations whereby schools which seemingly have adequate infrastructure, manpower, and are well equipped continue to collect PTA levy year in, year out.
Often you hear parents say that a school that already has a fence, a school that already has a computer lab, a school that has enough classrooms, the principal is still asking for PTA levy. Yours truly, most of the time, when you hear that, the principal is asking that they assist for pedagogic reasons, the hiring of part-time teachers and the hiring of auxiliary staff in schools. PTA is not only for infrastructural projects. I'm glad that the public knows that PTA depends on the project. When, for instance, you have a project or two or three projects, the PTA depends on how much that project or those projects cost. You may have one project, which is, for instance, building a block of two classrooms. and you get to the people of Minkaf, they come up with an estimate and say building of these two classrooms is going to cost 22 million francs. And then you say, fine, if the PTA accepts that they're going to put up that two classrooms, then the 22 million francs will be divided by the number of students projecting that you're going to have in the next school year. If, for instance, you don't have many students in school, why take up a project that is going to be too heavy? And so we advise that take projects, like the Englishman says, that you cut your coat according to your cloth. I think that if the principals do that, it will not be too heavy on the parents and will not have complaints coming from parents.
When officials say the PTA levy is not obligatory, what does this mean in earnest? Does it mean the school is not supposed to send away a child who fails to comply?
The school is not even supposed to send away a child who has not paid registration fee. We believe that if you have admitted them and they are in school, you should be able to come up with different ways by which you can cause them to pay fees. Yes, PTA is not obligatory, particularly because we have cases where people exaggerate. But the truth is that if we look at what the PTAs do, it is difficult for us to say that children should go to school, they pay the registration fee, and they don't pay their PTAs. Because if they do not pay their PTAs, the schools will not be able to run. We encourage parents to pay the PTA.
We assume that the PTA levy is adopted in a general assembly attended by parents. How do you justify the fact that some parents pay and others categorically refuse to pay?
I don't want to say it in such a way that the public will think that I am saying it's a must. But the truth is that by text, when the General Assembly meets and adopts that amount as an amount which they are going to pay for that year, it binds all the parents whose children are in that school for that year. It binds them. But I am saying that they should not like come one morning and say, go home because you have not paid PTA. No, that's why I'm saying we encourage parents to pay the PTA, because that is actually what is helping to run our schools. The state is spending so much on secondary education. In the Southwest, we have 8,000 plus teachers. And so just imagine how much the state is spending on salaries for teachers, training of teachers, and putting up structures where they can. And if parents can contribute their own part to ensure that their children learn in conducive environments by paying the PTA levy, I think it's a wonderful thing that started in the Anglo-Saxon system a long time ago. And we should please just continue with it, because it's a good practice.
Doctor, a new school year is about to begin. What checks and balances have been put in place to ensure that there is a transparent and judicious use of PTA funds which will be collected eventually?
We have already had meetings with our principals. The divisional delegations are preparing to have functional conferences so that they'll be able to talk with the bosses of schools as well and PTA presidents. We are saying that the texts are there. Let people do just what they are supposed to do, following the texts, so that we do not have cases of mismanagement. Principals are supposed to work in close collaboration with the PTA ESCO members and the school management board presidents, so that they come out clearly with what they want. And when the PTA accepts that this is what we are going to do, and they follow what they are supposed to do, and making sure that every record is in place, I am sure that 2024-2025 is going to be an exceptional year, because there will be no complaint about how PTAs are managed in schools in the Southwest region.
The Southwest Regional Delegate for Secondary Education, Dr. Mbua Hana Etonde, speaking to Olivia Mbuai Ambai. You are listening to Cameroon Calling on the radio network of the CLTV.
You are a child of the universe, no less than the trees and the stars. You have a
amid the noise and haste, and remember what peace there may be
in silence. As far as possible without surrender, be on good terms with all persons. Speak your truth quietly and clearly, and listen to others, even the dull and ignorant. They too have their story. Avoid loud and aggressive persons. They are vexations to the spirit. If you compare yourself with others, you may become vain and bitter, for always there will be greater and lesser persons than yourself.
You are a child of the universe, no less than the trees and the stars. You have a right to be here, and whether or not it is clear to you, no doubt the universe is unfolding as it should.
It's now time to open our mailbag. Let the people speak. Vanessa Woodlands Namung is here to read out the letters you sent to the program. Hi, Vanessa.
Hello, Sam.
The first letter is from Lawrence, writing from Soa in outlying Yaoundé. He is concerned about what he says is the irresponsibility of some youth these days.
Dear CC, most of our young people don't care about their future, nor the future of their country. They complain of hard times and bad governance, yet spend their fortune on beer and other hard substances. They constitute a security risk. How can someone who is jobless consume 3 bottles of beer a day? This is evident that tomorrow's affairs of the state is not safe in his hands. It is often said that youths are the leaders of tomorrow, but not all the youths. Instead, it has to do with those who are courageous, morally upright, determined, patient, patriotic, amongst others. As Chinua Achebe puts it, we are the young suckers who will pick up growth when old bananas die off. Consequently, let the various stakeholders, the government, the parents, the education family, the church, and the youth themselves, perform their respective responsibilities. For if it's not done, then we are done.
The second and last letter is also about the youth, coming from Nyuedze Lolo in Yaoundé, who notes a mad rush by young Cameroonians to travel abroad.
Dear Cameroon Calling, I write to express my deepest concern about the quest for greener pastures. As one writer said, slavery and colonialism are things of the past. Africans are responsible for their own misfortune. Inasmuch as we don't agree any less with this author, we must not lose sight of the fact that there is no smoke without fire. Be that as it may, it is important to interrogate these nagging questions. Is the quest for greener pastures a dangerous illusion? Why the mad rush of our youths abroad? Joblessness, corruption, lack of political transition, family pressure, bad influence, among others. The youths must believe in themselves and continuously work hard and forget about instant solutions. For even Christ began his public ministry at the age of 30. The government should fast-track decentralization to ensure that youths are actively involved in nation-building, create an enabling business environment which attracts investments and consequently employment. Lastly, even if youths must travel, let them use clean and legal means to do so in order to avoid crying and gnashing their teeth in the end.
Those were your letters. Keep on writing to the program, as that just may be your own way of contributing to nation building. In CC Sports, Simon Leunga says how this year's National Challenge Cup final is being prepared for without its characteristic verve of the yesteryears.
The final of the National Football Challenge Cup 2024 edition is imminent as the two finalists, Egle of the Menua and Colomb of the Ja and Lobo, finalized their preparations ahead of the showdown in Yaounde. Far from the lenses of TV cameras and the usual euphoria that goes with it, the two have been preparing in very low gear, a point lower than the usual pomp that goes with such games. The near indifference in the preparation, both for the clubs and administration, is born of the people's recent reluctance in watching the spectacle proposed these days by Cameroonian clubs. In the past, the final of the Cup of Cameroon was an event never to be missed. The ambience was top-notch and the spectacle guaranteed because of the caliber of players who animated the scene. Generations were marked by household names whose presence was a crowd puller and talents whose love for the game was never second to the gains of football. Even the clubs were mythical, as just a mention of their names was enough to send shockwaves down the spines of future opponents. Those were the years when younger players dreamt of donning the shirts of clubs like Canon, Dragon, Tonnerre, Lyon and Diamant Football Club. They manned the Yaounde football hegemony that was challenged by the wave from Douala in the likes of Oryx, Kaimang, Leopard, Dynamo and Union Sportive. Once in a while, the current flowed far from these two cities with sporadic challenges from prisons of Boya, PWD of Bamenda, Raseng of Bafoussam, Union Sportive of Abongbang, Epervier of Bolova, Kohi Club of Maroa, Federal of Fumban and Antant Ngaoundéré. But such challenges never lasted, as the usuals always went in for the best to keep the flame burning. Their club executives sojourned the national territory to scout for the best talents, brought them together and made the game tick. Reasons it was easy to predict the lineup before a game, while the national team became a home for the best who even became friends. Those were the years when even players proposed to their club presidents to go search for a particular player who gave them a good run for their money all through the season. No surprise, therefore, that Cameroonian clubs remains on top of Africa in continental club competitions, while the national team was a hard nut to crack. Local players had little to envy from those in the diaspora and challenged them very well on the field. That's how in the country's maiden World Cup appearance in 1982, only six of the 22 players present in Spain played out of Cameroon. Kahan Michel came from Stade Quimperois in France, Roger Miller from Bastia, Jean-Pierre Tokoto from Philadelphia Fever in the United States of America, Paul Bahoken from Cannes in France, and Joseph Antoine Bell from Stade Abidjan in Côte d'Ivoire. And they could hold top nations without fear. Fast forward to the present generation, and there is little to write home about. The domestic championship even goes unnoticed. Players go by unidentified. Club presidents are more concerned with personal gains than the game itself, while parents are in a haste to see their offsprings board an aircraft, no matter the destination, all in the name of playing professional football. And next jobs, like players' agents, are now en vogue, with the scene flooded by con men who rob families, alienate those who refuse to cooperate with their obnoxious activities, and destroy young talents. They provide illusions to families on the quick turnarounds of things if their kids' talents is exported, but disappear in thin air when the cash is disbursed. That is just our football today. No purpose, no direction, but lots of expectations. And that is where the FA FICA foot has failed. For close to 15 years now, the FA has been operating as if on autopiloting, using the national team as the main tool while club football is in the doldrums. Players are not far from depressions whenever they are called upon to play. Today, the illusion is even greater with a social media face that places them on a high pedestal, while the reality on the field is the reverse. Recently, the football trade union SINAFOC produced a reality data of clubs who failed to pay salaries to players, but that was sent fast into the dustbin because of the identity of the person piloting the file. The messenger was given prominence over the message. Difficult, therefore, for many to accept that the country's local football has touched the bottom, despite hopes and aspirations put on the shoulders of those who have seemingly activated the autopilot application. What has happened to the junior championship that was heralded with a youth football league even seeing the light of day? What has happened to the inflow of TV rights that was promised at the start? And why are we playing in downgraded pitches despite the existence of top-notch pitches around the country? An honest answer to these questions could be the start of a new dawn for local football in Cameroon, with real reflection done to seek solutions, reflections that will separate the game from its governors, reflections during which errors could be attributed without being retributions, reflections that should not be taken for a court case, and reflections void of McCarthy's tendencies to witch hunt and dismiss. That will be the real start to let the ball roll on a flat surface and the best to win, both for administrators and clubs. It will create an atmosphere where chest-beating goes with action on the ground, far from the evocation of past glories as a reason for success today. It is only then that club football will stand again and anxiety will be total whenever the Cup of Cameroon final is fast approaching, without which the far cry would never be heard and the vicious circle will continue to take pride of place over the much-intended wind of change.
Simon Leunga with CC Sports, and that's how we end the program today, in which contributions also came from Kelly Aben, Rigobert Maniga, Ashu Nyenti, Mercy Kusi, George Kelong, Moki Edwin Kinzeka, Olivia Mbwai Ambai, and Vanessa Wutnang Snamung. Bartholomew Njikne Ekami has been the sound recordist, Desiree Melingi at the panel mixer. Harrison Ashu produced the program under the coordination of George Kelong and Valerie Dikozomaru and the supervision of Madeleine Sopikoto. At the anchor in Yaounde and on behalf of the entire crew, I am Sam Bukuba saying thanks for listening and goodbye.
Cameroon Calling, a production of the news department of CRTV.